Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, recently, you know, in this programme, we were saying farewell to the British Ambassador to Ireland, Paul Johnston, but also Falcha to him, because he decided to leave the Foreign Office in London and stay and live in Ireland with his wife, Nicola, and he's really enjoying himself. And this morning, we're meeting his successor, the new ambassador representing Britain here, Cara Owen. She and her family arrived only last month, so a brand new studio, and we'll get to know her now because she's live in studio. Good morning, Ambassador. Falcha, good to see you in studio.
Garmagath. The Aguich.
People are very impressed by the cúpla focal Ascoelga.
Oh, they've been so kind and encouraging. I think you really take a risk when you launch yourself speaking in a language that's new to you.
Absolutely.
But people couldn't have been more encouraging. It's been wonderful.
Have you found it a difficulty? Because we've heard a very impressive a clip from the video earlier on where you're speaking and you're getting the pronunciations, which is the hard part even for Irish people.
Oh, it's really challenging. It's the most difficult language I've learnt, and I've learnt Cantonese and Vietnamese Wow. and French, but this is the most difficult. But it is so worth it. It's so rewarding. I think I'll be learning it for a very long time to come.
Very good. And you know, you have quite a couple of years here, don't you? Is there a defined stint?
So you normally do about 4 years as an ambassador. And I think that gives you enough time to really get to know the place and to really make your contribution to what is one of our most important relationships.
And is this, you've been in the Foreign Office in London for your whole career, but this is the first time you've been a fully fledged ambassador. Is that correct?
Well, I was High Commissioner in Singapore, which is the same thing.
Is
but
it?
You're called High Commissioner when you're in a Commonwealth country. So it's the same job.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But just with a different title.
Oh, that's very lofty. Is it the High Commissioner?
I know. It sounds a little bit like something off a Mikado, I think. A little bit Gilbert and Sullivan, but it's exactly the same kind of things that you're doing.
Okay, finally, people can say Ambassador, Your Excellency, rather than the High Commissioner, which
exactly.
is a whole different title. The first item we got of you was, of course, meeting President Higgins in the Auris last week. What happens at those ceremonies? There's quite a few ambassadors involved there.
So there were three ambassadors. There was the Belgian ambassador, the Spanish ambassador and myself. But you all do it individually. And it's a really important part of taking up your post as ambassador. You arrive with a letter from your head of state. Two letters, in fact. One that is withdrawing your predecessor and telling the president that they're withdrawing the predecessor. And the other one that's saying, and here is Cara, who is from now going to be representing me and my government. So it's a sort of, there's a really serious part of it.
Yeah.
But the president himself and the whole team at the Auris and the Irish Defence Forces and the Foreign Ministry went out of their way to make it feel friendly and warm and welcoming. It was wonderful.
Of course, a significant moment for him because this will be the last time he gets to receive the credentials
so
of
I
a
understand.
British ambassador particularly.
Yeah.
What's the protocols when you're meeting other ambassadors? Do you never see those ambassadors again because they're representing their country to the government of the people here? Ambassadors probably don't mix anymore then, do you?
Oh no, you often develop really close friendships with other ambassadors. They're new to the country too.
Yeah.
You're discovering it together. Sometimes you can be asking them for advice or sharing perspectives about what's happening. But most of all, I'm here to interact with Irish people,
yes.
Irish government, Irish businesses, British people that are based in Ireland.
I don't know which endears you more to Irish people, being a Liverpool fan or speaking as Ascoelga.
Well, I suppose it's a percentage game, isn't it? With the Liverpool fans, I'll get a percentage of the country and maybe I can get the rest with Ascoelga.
Especially if they go back into the doldrums, which are the signs.
It's been a painful weekend, please.
But surely they bounce back this early in the season. Yeah. Now, you have a good few Irish connections.
I do.
Both in your bloodline, I think, do you?
That's right, going back a bit. But yeah, both in my genetics. Many, many British people have some Irish DNA in their genetics and I'm no different. I think my connections go back to County Wicklow, outside Castle McAdam, and also County Down, Newtownards. So both on my mother's side.
Very good. And when did those people travel over? Do you know?
So in the late 1850s. So they were there by the 1861. Yeah, I think he went over to mine. I come from a mining community.
Oh, really?
Both coal mines and iron ore mines. And that's what brought him there. I haven't yet quite worked out exactly what brought his future wife there, but I'll be looking into that.
Himself.
The lady from
she's Wicklow, is she? Oh, she's from Newton Arts. She's from County Down. Yeah. Down in Wicklow. You know, they'll meet often in the championship. It's an Irish phrase you'll hear at some point along the way. And by marriage, you have a very serious Irish connection.
I really do. Yes, I 20 years ago, I met an Irish man. I went all the way to Aceh in Indonesia to meet this Irish guy. I don't know why I had to go so far to meet him, but anyway. And he was serving there with the Irish Defence Force, and I was there as a British diplomat supporting the Aceh peace process in Indonesia.
Amazing. So you're both kind of in the same sphere of international relations.
Yeah, exactly.
William Tierney.
That's right.
And where's William from?
William is from outside Ballinasloe in East County.
Is Galway. He?
Yeah.
Oh my God. So you're deeply, deeply Irish.
Yeah, well, I have learned an awful lot from my Irish in-laws, I have to say.
And he's retired now from the Defence Forces.
He is, yeah.
But he served overseas, so it's quite a lot.
Yes, like many, many, many members of the Irish Defence Forces, he was in Kosovo. He served in Aceh, like I mentioned, but he was also in Lebanon.
So he's travelled around with you in all the different missions you've served in?
And he has, from in Vietnam and to Paris and then to Singapore and then now back here.
And you've two little girls.
I do. Not so little anymore, actually. Yeah, they're bigger than me, both of them, I think.
They have names that lean very much towards these shores.
I know. And
it's
getting ridiculous at this point. I have to say, so I am probably the first British ambassador to have a daughter called Saoirse. And it's a name I absolutely adore. Yeah. I think it should instill her with a sense of freedom to be herself. My husband was very kind of uncompromising and non-negotiable about it. It's the name he wanted and it's the name she has.
Well done.
And Leela is the second one.
And is there a fod on Leela?
There is certainly a fod on Leela and she's very insistent. Yeah.
That's very biased on one side of the family. But you see, you have it on your side as well.
Yeah.
They're obviously doing their schooling around the world. What is it like to have a family to bring all around the place for every 4 years?
So I have to say, I mean, there was a piece in the Irish Times talking about Irish diplomats and what it's like to be their families. I think diplomats do ask quite a lot of their family. You know, my husband has had to sort of reinvent himself and find his own place and his own thing to do everywhere we've been. My kids have to make new friends. But on the whole, I hope if you had all of them in here, we would all say there was huge benefit in it. You know, it's a really good thing to have early in your life exposure to other cultures, an ability to look back at your own country, to see what you think that's great about it, to look at things that you think, oh, I wonder, could we try that in our country? That's the privilege of being somebody that lives internationally and a diplomat in particular.
They're going to have an incredible perspective on the world, aren't they?
Well, I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. They take a lot of interest in it. But I find that generally as well in Ireland, I think people are very internationally minded. They're very aware of what's happening in the world. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I was so keen to serve here.
That's one we've spread everywhere. That's why the ancestors made it across the way. Okay. What level of Gaeilge are you aiming for now that you're here and you're determined to learn more?
So I think I just want to be able to communicate easily.
Yeah.
It's really challenging, but I'm 54 now. One of the things I love about getting older is you just worry less. You just worry a whole heap less. I know I'll be making mistakes all over the place. Yeah. I found that will offend some people who are very, you know, maybe if they want it to be perfect.
We've had one or two on to us already this morning.
If they want it to be perfect. But, you know, I think there's nothing I can do. My wish to understand it really deeply and to be able to get better and better at it is really sort of deep and sincere. It's a beautiful language. I love the phraseology. It helps me understand why Hiberno English is like it is. In some ways, it makes me understand kind of deep cultural frames of reference that I find in Ireland and in Irish people. So to me, it's an incredible gift. Hard work, but an incredible gift.
Will you have a muncher? Will you have a teacher?
I have a muncher. She is spragul. She is cordial. She is absolutely wonderful. Is muntor ínthaki.
I have to say, cad ínthas that we have a British ambassador to Ireland. Learning, like it feels almost feels strange in a way because we've had such strange relationships between our two countries. But often, and having known the previous ambassador, Paul Johnston, and his wife, It's quite political rather than in the permanent civil service, which is, of course, what diplomatic missions and embassies are.
Yeah, and Paul, I mean, I think Paul was an amazing ambassador. I'm really proud to call him a friend and a still colleague, nearly former colleague. He did a really super job, and Nicola as well.
Because they're co-ambassadors, like yourself and William Tierney, aren't they?
Well, and the relationship, of course, there were some really tough times.
Oh, yeah.
And I think all of us that care deeply about the relationship will have felt that very deeply. I think, you know, every ambassador, when they're setting off, they get their marching orders from their head of government. So I know very clearly what my Prime Minister thinks and believes about this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most important relationships as far as he sees the world. That's why he saw the Taoiseach very early on in his time as Prime Minister. That's why we had the summit in March. And that's why he has told me to do as much as possible to strengthen the relationship across things like growth and energy and security and people to people.
And celebrating St. Patrick's Day in Downing Street.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think, you know, that was really him. And I think it was meaningful for both of us. But, you know, there's so much to do. You know, every week, €2 billion worth of trade happens between us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are, after the United States and Ireland itself, we're the third biggest investor in Ireland. 400,000 people get up every morning and go to work in either of our countries because of investment from the other. Those are really big figures, and it impacts on people's pockets. Energy security, the cost of energy. Because we share the same geography, these are the kind of issues we are working on together and will be working on more together, because it means something to our populations.
There is that kind of cooperation side, and then there's a sort of a cultural, maybe almost media-driven cynicism between the two countries. Is it a risk for you to be learning Irish? I can picture the Telegraph headlines in my mind.
I don't think so. You know, everywhere we go around the world, it's one of the things I'm most proud of the British Diplomatic Service. We really, really invest in languages. We believe that it's important not just for communication, but for understanding. So, you know, I've got a cohort of other ambassadors that started about the same time as me. And one by one, we're looking at what each other are doing, delivering some bits of media in different languages. It could be Slovak, it could be Kazakh, it could be Armenian. It's something we invest in really, really heavily.
It's contentious maybe for some unionists in the north, isn't it, that the British ambassador might be learning Irish? You'll have to learn Ulster Scots now as well to keep them happy.
I think that's the thing about the legislation that's been put in place in Northern Ireland. It's about valuing every single community and allowing every community to feel that it's at home in Northern Ireland.
OK, we'll come back to some of the issues, but we want to get to know you a little bit more. You don't come from what would have been the traditional diplomatic background, Oxford, Cambridge, some lovely public schools, they call them confusingly, even though it's fee-paying. You don't come from that background.
I don't.
Tell us about where you grew up.
So I grew up in West Cumbria. So on the edge of the Lake District, but it was a really, really beautiful. When I was growing up there, it was the end of the sort of mining period.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of feels, it feels a long way from London, let's say that.
Yes.
And I went to the local comprehensive school you know, it was far from diplomats I was reared, kind of thing, to use an Irish phrase. And it was my teacher, my history teacher when I was 16, who clearly saw how much I loved kind of political and diplomatic history, said, you should think about being a diplomat. And I'd never even heard about it. I went away, I looked it up in an encyclopedia, because that's what you did in those days, kids. And I thought, you know, that's really interesting. And from then it wormed away in the back of my mind. How interesting it would be to be involved in that.
And your studies were in Sheffield University.
Yeah, I did history.
You're ticking the opposite all the way through, aren't you?
That's
what
right.
They would have expected.
Yeah.
And then when you get it, it must have been a big moment in your family. Why did your family when you finally joined the Foreign Office?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my parents were if I'm blessed with anything, it's that being born into the family I was born into. Both of my parents were incredibly encouraging for whatever we wanted to be. We could be whatever we wanted as long as we wanted to be a good one. And they were really encouraging. So I think they were delighted. And I know that we lost my dad 15 years ago. But my mum, every step I take, she's incredibly proud. And I know my dad's here with me somewhere.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And when you do go into the Foreign Office, is it unusual even today for ambassadors to not come from the traditional Oxbridge background?
So I think it's changed a lot. Definitely when I first joined, I remember walking into the training room with the other diplomats and thinking, oh my goodness, they must have mixed up my application form with somebody else. I really did feel that that I wasn't necessarily the right person for this institution. But it's changed a lot. We think a lot about how can we properly represent the country that we serve. Mm-hmm. And so we have put in place a lot of things to try and increase the diversity. We haven't got there yet. But for example, I've got one female predecessor in this job. It was Veronica Sutherland. And she was here between 95 and 98. And so when I joined in 93, I was looking around to try and see what kind of organisation is this. And she was one of the only female ambassadors I could see. Yeah. So I remember her. I remember what she did. And since then, I think there's a generation above me that really blazed a trail. I was the first female High Commissioner in Singapore. So there are still quite a few places where you can be a first.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you find it challenging to go through that world, that career, being a woman, having your family and so on?
So definitely the generation, two generations above me, I think women had taken more extreme choices about career or family. I think people of my generation, some of it is also about, you know, having somebody that's willing to schlep around the world with you. And I think I thank William very much for that. He's been extremely supportive. But we've got a really good posse of women inside the ministry. And I can tell you that you have got some outstanding women Irish diplomats that I've had the pleasure of serving alongside and learning from, actually.
Some very high profile ones. Yeah. Someone is texting and Joseph is saying, how appropriate is the new ambassador's Christian name? As in Cara, friend, so on.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't look a bit affected that I spell it with a K. But yeah.
Ireland and Britain are like siblings. We don't always get on, but we're always family.
That's definitely how I feel. And I think it's almost like in many ways you can start a conversation halfway through. And that isn't always true when you're a diplomat. Countries don't always have that depth of understanding about the country that you come from or you about them. But I think it's true about us.
And there's lovely to see you making an effort with the language. There's quite a few messages on that front. So you're certainly doing well there. Now, on the sticking points, what are the areas we don't see eye to eye on at the moment? We're working on the Legacy Act. At the minute, which is...
Yeah, so I think that was a really big moment when the Tornistern, our Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, introduced the framework that we've put in place to work through this. This is, you know, it's taken the longest time. We have always, since the Good Friday Agreement was signed, we have always been working towards this moment. We've now introduced legislation into the House of Commons that will establish the Legacy Commission.
This is to repeal the legislation brought in by the previous
and to establish
Conservatives,
a new commission. And I think our government worked incredibly closely with the Irish government and also with impacted people and communities.
Because Ireland actually brought the case, which sort of forced the issue.
So I think what's really clear is how seriously both governments mean it. They know that there are families everywhere who still haven't got to the bottom of what happened to their loved ones. Mm-hmm. And it's now a really long time ago. So the feeling that I've really got from both of our governments and from the politicians that are involved in it is how deeply they want to see this resolved. And that's why we have agreed the framework between us. It's really important that we're working together on this. Now we've got the legislation going through the House of Commons. There'll be some Irish legislation that has to be put in place to enable information sharing. And that'll be the first time that's happened. So it was a really big moment.
What's in train now that ultimately is going to, you know, be the reckoning for that legislation in particular? Because it basically stops prosecutions, dealing with the troubles, it prevents victims getting compensation and so on.
So I think the legislation goes through the House of Commons. That'll take a little while. It'll go through our whole legislative process. The Irish government has to set up its own legislation as well. That is a kind of new thing. I think we're really keen that we get to the point where the Legacy Commission can start its work. And
does it fully repeal the Legacy Act?
Yes.
It does, basically. Yeah. So. The United Ireland has been discussed a lot here and in Britain as well, increasingly. And indeed, Ian Paisley Jr., one of the most devout unionists, is discussing United Ireland at the moment on the podcast with the BBC. This must be something that you bring briefed on in your office.
So I think the Good Friday Agreement's really clear about the future on this. And it sets out the fact that it will be for the people of Northern Ireland to decide what their status is, and it's all there in the Good Friday Agreement. Yes, I've definitely heard people talking about it. There are books coming out about it. But I think the processes are all there clearly in the Good Friday Agreement.
Are you worried about it? Is the British Embassy worried about this? Because the direction very much is towards a united Ireland rather than, you know, maintaining the status quo forever, more so than we would have said about 10 years ago.
I mean, this is something for it's something for the people of Northern Ireland to talk about and think about, and will be guided by their wishes. So it's
the British government is the one that decides when there's a border poll.
That's right. That's what the legislation says. It's when the Secretary of State believes that there is a majority in favour of having a border.
Do you know what that looks like? What the kind of, it looks like a majority? Is it based on polls? What happens?
So I think it's for the Secretary of State to decide. That's what it says in the Good Friday Agreement.
Your job is difficult, like I said. I hear a lot of British people, in the media in particular, we also hear politically as well, criticising Ireland at the moment that we're not looking after our own defence, that we're prone to attacks from Russian subs or whatever they're talking about sort of indirectly. That's a sort of, we would have the view, quite a lot of people, that our neutrality is our defence and we don't want to tool up our military.
Yes, I've heard how important neutrality is. I know about that. I think what's different, I've been coming to Ireland for a long time now, and what's changed for both of us is the external context. You know, I started being a diplomat in the 1990s, and sometimes when I think back to that period and compare it to now, it is so different. Our external context is much more contested, much more challenging, and I think we've got a war right on the border of Europe that people in Ireland feel really deeply, and so do we. We know that our European friends in the Baltic states, for example, feel it very individually and personally. And I think that's causing all of us to think about, do we have our security and our defence in the right place? I can see that. I can hear that in the debate. And the government has talked about it. The government here has, you can see in the last budget, that they're thinking about how they invest in defence. And I think we share a geography, so it's absolutely natural that we will be talking to your government and sharing perspectives on that and seeing what we can do.
It just highlights how busy your job is going to be, and incredible that you're going to take the time out to learn the Cúpla Focail all along the way. There's a lovely message from Maureen in Mohill, which is in County Leitrim. The British are so like us here. They're great people. They get a bad name from their colonial past that was none of their doing. I have six lovely British grandchildren. Kind of highlights
how we're all
melded together.
There'll be so many people that have those kind of stories too.
Yeah. Listen, Gura Míle Maith agat, and we wish you every success in the role, Bear Bua. And it's been a pleasure to get to know you this morning.
Gura Míle agat.
British Ambassador to Ireland, Cara Owen. Back after
this. Email oliver@rte.ie.